Audible Frontiers presents The Mote in God's Eye. Written by Larry Nivens and Jerry Pornell. And narrated by L.J. Ganser.
Part 4. Crazy Eddie's Answer. 39. Departure. Boats report no trace of our midshipmen, my admiral. Captain Mikhailov's tone was both apologetic and defensive. Few officers wanted to report failure to Kutyasov. The burly admiral sat impassively in his command chair on Lenin's bridge. He lifted his glass of tea and sipped, his only acknowledgement a brief grunt. Kutyasov turned to the others grouped around him at staff posts. Rod Blaine still occupied the flag lieutenant's chair. He was senior to Commander Borman, and Kutyasov was punctilious about such matters.
8 scientists, Kutyasov said. 8 scientists. 5 officers, 14 spacers and marines, all killed by Motis.
Motis?
Dr. Horvath swiveled his command chair toward Kutyasov.
Admiral, nearly all those men were aboard MacArthur when you destroyed her. Some might still have been alive. As for the midshipmen, if they were foolish enough to try to land with lifeboats...
His voice trailed off as Rod turned dead eyes toward him.
Sorry, Captain. I didn't mean it that way. Truly. I am sorry. I liked those boys, too.
But you can't blame the Motis for what happened. The Motis have tried to help, and they can do so much for us. Admiral, when can we get back to the embassy ship?
Kutyasov's explosive sound might have been a laugh.
Ha! Doctor! We are going home as soon as boats are secured. I thought I had made that clear.
The science minister pressed his lips tightly against his wide teeth.
I was hoping that you had regained your sanity.
His voice was a cold, feral snarl.
Admiral, you are ruining the best hopes mankind ever had. The technology we can buy, that they'll give us, is orders of magnitude above anything we could expect for centuries. The Motis have gone to enormous expense to make us welcome. If you hadn't forbidden us to tell them about the escaped miniatures, I'm sure they'd have helped. But you had to keep your damned secrets, and because of your stupid xenophobia, we lost the survey ship and most of our instruments. Now you antagonize them by going home when they planned more conferences.
My God, man.
If they were warlike, nothing could provoke them as you have.
You are finished?
Kutyasov asked, contemptuously.
I'm finished for now. I won't be finished when we get back.
Kutyasov touched a button on the arm of his chair.
Captain Mikhailov, please make ready for departure to the Alderson entry point. 1 1/2 gravities, Captain.
Aye, aye, sir.
You are determined to be a damn fool, then, Horvath protested.
Blaine, can't you reason with him?
I am determined to carry out my orders, Doctor,
Kutyasov said heavily. If Horvath's threats meant anything to him, he didn't show it. The Admiral turned to Rod.
Captain, I will welcome your advice, but I will do nothing to compromise safety of this ship, and I cannot allow further personal contact with Motis. Have you suggestions, Captain Lord Blaine?
Rod had listened to the conversation without interest, his thoughts a confused blur. What could I have done? He asked himself endlessly.
There was nothing else to concern him. The Admiral might ask his advice, but that was courtesy.
Rod had no command and no duties. His ship was lost, his career finished. Brooding in self-pity wasn't doing any good, though.
I do think, sir, that we should try to keep the Motis' friendship. We shouldn't make the government's decisions.
You are saying I do that?
Kutyasov demanded.
No, sir. But it is likely the Empire will want to trade with the Mote.
As Dr. Horvath says, they have done nothing hostile.
What of your midshipmen?
Rod swallowed hard.
I don't know, sir.
Possibly Potter or Whitbread weren't able to control their lifeboats, and Staley tried a rescue. It would be like him. Kutyasov scowled.
3 lifeboats, Captain. All 3 re-enter, and all 3 burn.
He examined the displays around him. A boat was being winched into Lenin's hangar deck, where Marines would flood it with poison gas. No aliens would get loose in his flagship.
What would you like to say to Motis, Doctor?
I won't tell them what I'd like to say, Admiral, Horvath said pointedly. I will stay with your story of plague. It's almost true, isn't it? A plague of miniatures. But, Admiral, we must leave open the possibility of a returning expedition.
They will know you lie to them,
Kutuzov said flatly.
Blaine, what of that? Is better Motis hear explanations they do not believe?
Damn it. Doesn't he know I don't want to think about Motis? Or anything else? What good is my advice? Advice from a man who lost his ship.
Admiral, I don't see what harm it would do to let Minister Horvath speak to the Motis.
Rod emphasized minister. Not only was Horvath a ranking council minister, but he had powerful connections with the Humanity League, and influence in the Imperial Traders Association as well. That combination had nearly as much clout as the Navy.
Somebody ought to talk to them. It doesn't matter much who. There's not a man aboard who can lie to his fianch.
Very well. Da.
Captain Mikhailov, please have communications call Mote Embassy ship. Dr. Horvath will speak to them.
The screens lit to show a brown and white, half-smiling face. Rod grimaced, then glanced up quickly to confirm that his own image pickup wasn't on. The Moti looked at Horvath.
Fianch!
Ah, I was hoping to speak to you. We are leaving now. We must. The Moti's expression didn't change.
That seemed obvious, but we are very distressed, Anthony. We have much more to discuss. Trade agreements, rental of bases in your empire.
Yes, yes, but we haven't the authority to sign treaties or trade agreements, Horvath protested.
Really, we did accomplish a lot, and now we have to go.
There was plague on MacArthur, something new to our doctors, and we don't know the focal infection center or the vector. And since this ship is our only way home, our decision-makers think it best we leave while there is a full astrogation crew. We'll be back.
Will you come yourself? The Moti asked.
If at all possible, I'd love to.
He had no trouble sounding sincere about that.
You will be welcome. All humans will be welcome. We have great hopes for trade between our races, Anthony. There is much we can learn from each other. We have gifts as well. Can you not take them on your ship?
Why, thank you.
Horvath looked at Kutuzov. The Admiral was about to explode. He shook his head violently.
It would not be wise, Horvath said sadly. Until we know what caused the plague, it is best we add nothing we have not already been exposed to.
I'm very sorry.
So am I, Anthony. We have noted that your engineers are... How can I put this delicately? Are not so advanced as ours in many ways. Underspecialized, perhaps. We have thought partially to remedy this with our gifts.
Excuse me a moment, Horvath said. He turned to Kutuzov after switching off the sound pickup.
Admiral, you cannot refuse such an opportunity. This may be the most significant event in the history of the Empire.
The Admiral nodded slowly. His dark eyes narrowed.
It is also true that Motis in possession of Langston Field and Alderson Drive may be most significant threat in history of human race, Minister Horvath.
I'm aware of it, Horvath snapped. He turned the sound pickup on.
I am afraid that...
The Moti interrupted.
Anthony, can you not inspect our gifts? You may take pictures of them. Learn them well enough to duplicate them later.
Surely, that would be no danger to persons who have been on the Mote planet itself? Horvath thought furiously. He had to have those. The pickup was switched off, and Horvath smiled thinly at the Admiral.
He's right, you know. Can't we put them in the cutter?
Kutuzov seemed to taste sour milk. Then he nodded. Horvath turned back to the Moti in relief.
Thank you. If you will place the gifts in the cutter, we will study them on the way out, and you may retrieve both the gifts and the cutter, our gift to you, at the Crazy Eddy Point in 2.5 weeks.
Excellent, the Moti said warmly. But you will not need the cutter. One of our gifts is a spacecraft with controls suitable for human hands and minds. The others will be aboard it. Kutuzov looked surprised and nodded quickly. Horvath caught it with an inward smile. That's wonderful. We will bring gifts for you on our return. We want very much to repay your hospitality. Admiral Kutuzov was saying something. Horvath leaned away from the screen pickup to listen. Ask about the midshipmen, the admiral commanded. Horvath gulped and said, Is there any other word about our midshipmen? The Moti's voice took on a pained note. How could there be, Anthony? They were killed attempting re-entry, and their craft burned away completely. We have sent you pictures. Did you not receive them?
I didn't see them, Horvath replied, which was true, but it didn't make saying it any easier. The damned admiral didn't believe anything. What did he think, that the boys were captured somewhere and being tortured for information? I'm sorry, I was instructed to ask.
We understand. Humans are very concerned about their young decision-makers. So are Motis. Our races do have much in common. It has been good to speak with you again, Anthony. We hope you will return soon.
An alarm flashed on the bridge consoles. Admiral Kutuzov frowned and listened attentively to something Horvath couldn't hear. Simultaneously, a speaker announced the quartermaster's report. Ship's boat secure, sir. Ready to depart. The Moti had evidently overheard. She said,
The gift ship is quite capable of catching up with you, provided you do not accelerate at more than...
There was a pause as the Moti listened to something. 3 of your gravities. Horvath shot an inquiring eye at the admiral. The officer was brooding heavily, evidently about to say something. Instead, he nodded to Horvath.
1.5 of our G's for this trip, Horvath told the Moti.
Our gifts will join you in 5 hours, the Moti said.
The screens flashed, and Horvath's pickup went dead. Admiral Kutuzov's voice grated in the minister's ear.
I am informed that a ship has left Mot Prime, and is traveling toward Alderson Point at 1.74 of our gravities. 2 Mot gravities. You will please have them explain what that ship is doing?
The admiral's voice was calm enough, but the tone was imperative. Horvath gulped and turned back to the Moti. His screen came active again. He asked hesitantly, afraid to offend them.
Do you know? He finished.
Certainly, the Moti replied smoothly. I have only just learned of it myself. The masters have sent our ambassadors to the Empire to rendezvous with you. There will be 3 of them, and we request that you convey them to your imperial capital, where they will represent our race. They have full authority to negotiate for us.
Kutuzov took a deep breath. He seemed about to scream, and his face was almost purple with effort, but he only said, very quietly, so that the Moti could not hear.
Tell them we must discuss this. Captain Mikhailov, accelerate when convenient.
Aye, aye, sir.
We're leaving now, Horvath told the Moti. We must discuss the question of ambassadors. This is a surprise. I would have hoped that you would come yourself. Will there be any of our Fjansh sent as ambassadors?
He spoke rapidly, as the warning tones sounded behind him.
There will be time for any discussions needed, the Moti assured him. And no Moti ambassador could identify with any individual human. All must represent our race. Surely you can understand that? The 3 have been selected to represent all views, and unanimously acting, they can commit all Motis to an agreement. Given the plague menace, they would expect to be quarantined until you are certain they are no threat to your health. A loud tone sounded through Lenin. Farewell, Anthony. To all of you, and return soon.
The final warning horns blared, and Lenin surged forward. Horvath stared at the blank screen, as behind him, the others broke into astonished chatter. 40. Farewell. His Imperial Majesty's President-class battleship Lenin was packed, crammed to capacity and beyond with MacArthur's crew and the scientists who had been aboard her. Able spacers shared hammocks in rotation with their duties. Marines slept in corridors, and officers were stuffed three and more into staterooms meant for one. There were Moti artifacts salvaged from MacArthur in her hangar deck, which Kutuzov insisted be kept in vacuum, constantly under guard, with inspections. There was no place aboard where the ship's company could be assembled. If there had been an assembly point, it would not have been used. Lenin would remain at battle stations until she left the Moat system, even during the funeral services conducted by David Hardy and Lenin's chaplain, George Alexis. It was not an unusual situation for either, although it was traditional for the ship's company to assemble when possible. Burial services were often conducted with the ship at battle stations. As he put on a black stole and turned to the missile, a rating held open for him, David Hardy reflected that he had probably conducted more requiems this way than before an assembly. A trumpet note sounded through Lenin.
"Ship's company at ease,"
the chief boatswain ordered quietly.
"Eternal rest grant them, O Lord,"
Hardy intoned.
"And let light perpetual shine upon them," Alexis answered.
Every verse and response was familiar to anyone who had been in the Navy long enough to be part of Lenin's crew.
"I am the resurrection and the life," saith the Lord. "Whosoever believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live, and whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die."
The service went on, with the spacers responding from their duty stations, a low murmur through the ship.
"I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, Write, from henceforth blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. Even so, saith the Spirit, for they rest from their labors."
Rest, Rod thought. There's that, anyway. Rest for the kids. He shivered. I've seen plenty of ships lost, and plenty of men under my command have bought it 100 parsecs from home. Why is this one getting to me? He took a deep breath, but the tightness in his chest remained unchanged. Lights dimmed throughout Lenin, and the recorded voices of the Imperial Navy choir chanted a hymn in which the crewmen joined. Day of wrath and doom impending, David's words with Sybil's blending, heavens and worlds in ashes ending.
Sybil? Rod thought. God, that must be ancient.
The hymn went on and on, ending in a burst of male voices.
Do I believe any of this? Rod wondered.
Hardy does. Look at his face. And Kelly, ready to launch his comrades out the torpedo tubes.
Why can't I believe as they do?
But I do, don't I? I always thought I did. There's got to be some purpose in this universe. Look at Barry. This isn't even his religion, but it's getting to him. Wonder what he's thinking.
Horace Barry stared intently at the torpedo tubes. 4 bodies and a head. The head of a Marine the Brownies had used for a Trojan horse. Barry had seen it only once, spinning through space in a cloud of fog and shattered glass, and kicking, thrashing, dying Brownies. He remembered a square jaw, a wide, slack mouth, glittering dead eyes. Allah be merciful to them, and may his legions descend on the moat.
Sally's taking it better than I am, Rod thought, and she's a civilian. We both liked those boys. Why don't I worry about the others? 5 Marines killed getting the civilians out. It wouldn't be so bad if the middies had been killed in action. I expected losses when I sent the rescue party in with the cutter. I wasn't sure the kids would ever get out of Mac at all. But they did. They were safe.
Unto Almighty God we commend the souls of our brothers departed, and we commit their bodies to the deeps of space, in sure and certain hope of the resurrection unto eternal life, through our Lord Jesus Christ, at whose coming in glorious majesty to judge the worlds, the seas shall yield their dead, and the deeps give forth their burdens.
Kelly pressed the keys, and there was a soft whoosh. Another, 3, 4, 5. Only 4 bodies and a head recovered out of 27 dead and missing.
Ship's company, attention! Shoot!
And what will the Motis make of that? Rod wondered.
Three broadsides fired off into space at nothing, except the third, which would vaporize the bodies launched a moment ago. The Admiral had insisted, and no one had argued. Contralto trumpet notes died away as Lennon's trumpeter and MacArthur's ended taps in duet. The ship was still for a moment.
"Ship's company! Dismissed!"
The officers moved silently away from the torpedo room. Lights brightened in the corridors and men hurried back to their action stations or their crowded rest areas. Navy routine continues, Rod thought. Funeral services are part of the book, too. There is a regulation for everything. Birth aboard ship, registration of, burial, with or without bodies, and one for captains who lose their ships. The book demands a court-martial for that one.
Rod. Wait a minute, Rod, please.
He stopped at Sally's call. They stood in the corridor, while the other officers and crew split around them. Rod wanted to join them, to get back to the solitude of his cabin, where no one would ask him what happened aboard MacArthur. Yet here was Sally, and something way inside wanted to talk to her, or just be close to her.
Rod, Dr. Horvath says the Motis have sent ambassadors to meet us at the Crazy Eddy Point, but Admiral Kuchisov won't let them aboard. Is that right?
Damn, he thought. Motis again, Motis. It's right. He turned away.
Rod, wait. We've got to do something. Rod, where are you going?
She stared at his back as he walked rapidly away.
Now what did I do? She wondered.
Blaine's door was closed, but the telltale showed that it wasn't locked. Kevin Renner hesitated, then knocked. Nothing happened. He waited a moment, then knocked again.
Come in.
Renner opened the door. It seemed strange to walk directly into Blaine's cabin. No Marine sentry on duty. None of the mysterious aura of command that surrounds a captain.
Hi, Captain. Mind if I join you?
No.
Can I get you anything?
Blaine clearly didn't care one way or another. He didn't look at Renner, and Kevin wondered what would happen if he took the polite offer seriously. He could ask for a drink.
No, not time to push. Not just yet.
Renner took a seat and looked around.
Blaine's cabin was big. It would have been a tower room if Lennon had been designed with a tower. There were only four men and one woman who rated cabins to themselves, and Blaine wasn't using the precious room. He looked to have been sitting in that chair for hours, probably ever since the funeral services. Certainly he hadn't changed. He'd had to borrow one of Mikhailov's dress uniforms, and it didn't fit at all. They sat silently, with Blaine staring into some internal space-time that excluded his visitor.
"I've been going over Buckman's work," Renner said at random. He had to start somewhere, and it probably shouldn't be with Motis.
"Oh, how goes it?"
Blaine asked politely.
"Way over my head. He says he can prove there's a protostar forming in the coal sack. In 1,000 years it'll be shining by its own light. Well, he can't prove it to me because I don't have the math."
How are you making out? Renner showed no indication of leaving. Enjoying your vacation from duties?
Blaine finally lifted haunted eyes.
Kevin, why did the kids try to do a re-entry?
God's eyes, Captain, that's plain silly. They wouldn't have tried anything of the kind.
Jesus, he's not even thinking straight. This is going to be tougher than I thought.
Then you tell me what happened.
Renner looked puzzled, but obviously Blaine meant it.
Captain, the ship was lousy with brownies. Everywhere, nobody was looking. They must have got to the lifeboat storage area pretty early. If you were a Moti, how would you redesign an escape craft?
Superbly.
Blaine actually smiled. Even a dead man couldn't pass up a straight line like that.
You had me wondering, Renner grinned, then turned serious.
No, what I mean is, they'd redesign for every new situation. In deep space, the boat would decelerate and scream for rescue. Near a gas giant, it would orbit. Always automatic, mind, because the passengers could be hurt or unconscious. Near a habitable world, the boat would re-enter.
Eh? Blaine frowned.
There was a spark of life in his eyes. Renner held his breath.
Yeah, but Kevin, what went wrong? If the Brownies got to the boats, they'd have designed them right. Besides, there'd be controls. They wouldn't make you re-enter. Renner shrugged. Can you figure out Modi control panels at a glance? I can't, and I doubt that the middies could. But the Brownies would expect them to. Captain, maybe the boats weren't finished, or got damaged in a firefight. Maybe. Maybe a lot of things. Maybe they were designed for Brownies. The kids would have had to crowd in, rip out a dozen 15-centimeter Modi crash couches or something. There wasn't much time, with the torpedoes due to go in 3 minutes. Those goddamn torpedoes. The casings were probably full of Brownies and a rat ranch, if anyone had looked. Renner nodded. But who'd know to look? I should have. Why? Renner asked it seriously. Skipper, there's... I'm not a skipper.
Aha, Renner thought.
Yes, sir. There's still not a man in the Navy who'd have looked. Nobody. I didn't think of it. The Tsar was satisfied with your decontamination procedure, wasn't he? Everybody was. What bloody good does it do to blame yourself for a mistake we all made? Blaine looked up at Renner and wondered. The sailing master's face was slightly red. Now why is he so stirred up?
There's another thing, Rod said. Suppose the lifeboats were properly designed. Suppose the kids made a perfect re-entry, and the Motis lied.
I thought of that, said Renner. Do you believe it?
No, but I wish I could be sure.
You would be if you knew Motis as well as I do. Convince yourself. Study the data. We've got plenty aboard this ship, and you've got the time. You've got to learn about Motis. You're the Navy's heaviest expert on them.
Me? Rod laughed. Kevin, I'm not an expert on anything. The first thing I've got to do when we get back is convince a court-martial.
Oh, rape the court-martial, Renner said impatiently. Really, Captain, are you sitting here brooding over that formality? God's teeth!
And what do you suggest I brood over, Lieutenant Renner?
Kevin grinned. Better Blaine irritated than the way he'd been.
Oh, about why Sally's so glum this afternoon? I think she's hurt because you're mad at her.
About what you're going to say when Kutuzov and Horvath have it out over the Moti ambassadors? About revolts and secessions in the colony worlds? Or the price of iridium? Or inflation of the crown? Renner, for God's sake, shut up!
Kevin's grin broadened.
Or how to get me out of your cabin? Captain, look at it this way. Suppose a court finds you guilty of negligence. Certainly nothing worse. You didn't surrender the ship to an enemy or anything. So suppose they seriously want your scalp, and they hang that on you. Worst thing they could do would be ground you. They wouldn't even cashier you. So they ground you, and you resign. You're still going to be 12th Marquess of Crucis.
Yeah. So what?
So what? Renner was suddenly angry. His brows knitted and one fist clenched. So what? Look, Captain, I'm just a merchant skipper. All my family's ever been, and all we ever want to be. I put in a hitch in the Navy because we all do. Maybe back home we're not so thick on imperialism as you are in the capital, but part of that's because we trust you aristocrats to run the show. We do our part, and we expect you characters with all the privileges to do yours.
Well... Blaine looked sheepish and a little embarrassed by Renner's outburst.
And just what do you see as my part?
What do you think? You're the only aristocrat in the Empire who knows a bloody thing about Motis, and you're asking me what to do?
Captain, I expect you to put your arse in gear, that's what.
Sir?
The Empire's got to develop a sensible policy about Motis, and the Navy's influence is big. You can't let the Navy get its views from Kutuzov. You can start by thinking about those Moti ambassadors the Admiral wants to leave stranded here.
I'll be damned. You really are worked up about this, aren't you?
Renner grinned.
Well, maybe a little.
Look, you've got time. Talk to Sally about the Motis. Go over the reports we sent up from Mote Prime. Learn about them so when the Admiral asks your advice, you'll have some sensible arguments to give him. We've got to take those ambassadors back with us.
Rod grimaced. Motis aboard another ship. Good Lord.
And stop thinking like that, Renner said. They won't get loose and multiply all over Lenin. They wouldn't have time, for that matter. Use your head, sir. The Admiral will listen to you. He's got it in for Horvath. Anything Doc suggests, the Tsar's going to turn down. But he'll listen to you. Rod shook his head impatiently. You're acting as if my judgment were worth something. The evidence is against that. Good Lord. You're really down in the dumps, aren't you? Do you know what your officers and men think of you? Have you any idea? Hell, Captain, it's because of guys like you that I can accept the aristocracy. Kevin stopped, embarrassed at having said more than he intended. Look, the Tsar's got to ask your opinion. He doesn't have to take your advice, or Horvath's, but he does have to ask both of you. That's in the expedition orders. How the devil do you know that? Captain, my division had the job of rescuing the logs and order books from MacArthur, remember? They weren't marked secret. The hell they weren't. Well, maybe the light was bad and I didn't see the security stamps. Besides, I had to be sure they had the right books, didn't I?